All right, let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know what it is. Welcome back to your favorite podcast.
Wrestling with Griffin, yeah.
Woo, woo, woo. Gentlemen, welcome back to a very special edition of Griffin with Griffin. Today I have a guest, and I'm on location at the great Dane Cook's house where he filmed his latest special, and he's on here to talk about it. It's called Above It All. You can find it on moments.com/Dane Cook, and it's available right now or at Dane Cook right now. And we are filming the podcast exactly where he shot his special, so this is a great one, and I look forward for you guys to seeing it. Welcome back to Riffin' with Griffin.
Riffin' with Griffin, yeah.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Riffin' with Griffin.
Anyways, y'all, this is a good one, so let's get right to it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the podcast, the fantastic Mr.
Riffin' with Griffin.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh yeah, this
you
is great.
Good here, man.
Yeah.
Wait, I feel like you're in front of me. Should
I?
Wait, I should be. Wait, right? Just so we're not like okay. Yeah, now we're looking at each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, this feels
a good angle. Does
yeah,
that feel
yeah.
good?
This is good.
Yeah, and I like your Oprah cup.
I'm rocking Oprah.
I'm in good company.
And then look what I gave you. I gave you my high school graduation cup.
Oh wow, class of 19. Yeah, I'm class of 1990.
Boom.
Yeah, look at us. Okay, Hasha, I'm probably going to do a recording thing ahead of time too, but yeah, it doesn't matter. Guys, very special.
doesn't matter.
Doesn't
that's
matter.
The credo of every comic's career.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the inner voice at the very, very back of your mind. It doesn't matter.
What am I doing?
I'm trying.
Yeah, we're doing. You know, I had this idea. Welcome to the podcast for a second time. The fantastic, the fabulous Mr. Dane Cook, my friend, and we're at Cook Tower. and that's a deep cut for the Warzone fans that watch me on.
Oh, that's right. That's right. All the way back to Verdansk. We missed you, Verdansk.
Yeah. So it was Cook Tower for a long time that you never streamed with me, so then it became Griff Tower.
That's right.
You know, because that's where I always dropped
Do people know why I didn't stream with you? Because I felt like I'm so serious a competitor that people are going to be like, where are the yucks in here, man? But you know me. I'm in there to win.
But you ever watch online gaming? It's like that.
Now I feel like I'd fit in that portion.
Fine. It doesn't matter at this point right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I get it. You know, people are worried about that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, you're still, you know, you don't want to like, you know, you're about to book a big movie with like, you know, Sissy
what have you
Space.
Heard?
Yeah,
wait,
right?
What?
And then at the meeting they go, we saw you on Warzone. And so you're not going to get this part. But here we are. We're at Dane's house. And
yeah, this is where I live. I do live here.
And you did your upcoming special.
Above It All. We filmed it. This was the stage. You were sitting where I stood and performed.
And he performed with this beautiful view of Los Angeles. This is an example of like.
There's 9 crimes happening in real time. Just look around. You might see a gunshot muzzle.
It's like, shout out to Ian Edwards. Ian Edwards has a great joke about, like, you know, when you get to look at those poor people lights, you know.
Poor people lights.
That's the best view.
No, that's the dark spots.
Yeah, so, but here we are, and I saw the trailer for the special. It looks great.
Thanks,
it looks really different. And so that's my first question about this is like, Were you searching for something different?
Mm-hmm.
Are you at the point in your career where you felt like the pressure of doing something different, or is it just like, I've been doing this a long time and I want to do something different, or was it a combination of both?
It was a combination of both, but also there was a strong desire after 2019. I did Radio City Music Hall for the first time. There was a moment where I was going to film there, and then somebody had told me John Mulaney was filming his special there. And it's kind of that comic thing of like, oh, if that person's doing Red Rocks, I don't want to do my thing there. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm not going to end up doing that. And I was remembering that I moved into this house 12 years ago and I sat right here with my brother. And that was probably about a month before I ended up putting him in prison for being a bad business manager.
Refer to the first time Dane was on the podcast get the backstory on that.
Yeah. Let's get some hits up on the
But that was an understatement.
I sat here with my then brother before I bought the house, and I was like, wow, I'd love to buy this place. I'd only lived in apartments or out of duffel bags, as comics know, for our whole career. Yeah. And so he was like, go for it. You should do it. By rights, after that era, I was like probably not financially in a situation where I could do that. And yet, once I figured it out and I did move in and I saved the house, I remember thinking the ability to stand here, maybe, bring a bunch of people in, harken back to growing up in Boston where we would stand on the porch and you would talk shit with your neighbors.
Right, right.
Okay? This is a bean town, East Coast, very East Coast thing. You gather around. Used to not be called roasting. It was called busting chops. You get your neighbors. You fucking, say your lawn's, looks terrible. And everybody like your car's too. Like everybody kind of bust each other's chops. And if you got laughs, you were kind of like the talk of the neighborhood that night, right? It was like you'd see people leaving going, man, Eric, dude, you got us tonight. And so it was a little bit of like the nostalgia of growing up, like what happens when you put me on my porch and I have a routine, but I also just play with the people that came to visit and also just like what comes out of me if I'm home with the act.
Yeah.
Coupled with what happened with my brother was like this felt like almost like something meaningful to go, this represents success, failure, and then the belief in yourself to come back against all odds. So I thought doing it here met what you said expectation-wise for myself, but also I was looking for something aesthetically different from what I think maybe, I don't know if you want to get into it, like a lot of comedy shows these days just do not look great on television.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, but oh man, I'm glad you got to do your thing here first because I heard Mulaney was going to do it here.
In his pajamas.
He was scheduled to do it here, so it's good that you got it.
His pajamas probably look like a suit. I bet he has like one of those onesies that looks just like
from a distance, but it's a onesie. Oh, hilarious. That's great.
Yeah.
But you've had so many different types of specials. If you think about it, from an arena, from Vicious Circle to like that sort of more dark, intimate one at the Laugh Factory.
Very monochromatic.
Very one shot. It was very like you're reading letters and it was a very emotional thing to like now this.
Yeah.
And some other ones in between there. Yeah. Oh, and then like this was something that he was worried about. Was like you said that this didn't happen a lot.
It only happened one time during the first taping, but I had some lines ready to go if Chopper went overhead like that. So it worked out. I'm just glad there wasn't like a high-speed pursuit through the hills that night, or I would have been... Because I paid for this thing. This budget, it came out of my whole pocket. So if this was going to happen two nights in a row, I'd have the most expensive home video of a comedy set ever with this.
Yeah, but what if you had these great jokes ready for this, and then it never happened?
I'd be wanting to have a helicopter.
You'd be like, where's the damn helicopters?
But getting back to what you were saying, it was like, the idea that comedy specials... the reason my comedy specials were monochromatic and that incredible look that Marty Kullner created for Vicious Circle was I grew up loving the specials on HBO where people had a set.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Carlin had a cemetery behind him, or right. Robin Williams had like a big top, and it matched the theme and it matched the energy.
But that's when it was special.
Yeah, and we've lost a lot of that. So Marty Kullner directed this. This is the third time I've got to work with the legendary Marty Kullner. And when I told him what I wanted to do, he's like, the first thing he said, he goes, drones. And I'm like, yeah, when you think comedy, you think drones. So we got a beautiful camera package, and this is where it happened. This is where it took place.
Yeah, you did. You say you did it yourself. I mean, that's just how it is right now. But, you just have more means to, really do it yourself in a way that it's like, You know what I mean? Because look, this is a beautiful home, man. I mean, like I always, we talked about this before. I remember from the last time. It's like, it's good to be here. I thought of this immediately. When I saw you were doing it at home, I was like, well, let me come do the podcast here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's just like, great. This is, you know what I mean? Because yeah. This is like, it's great. You know, this is
look
like,
at dude, this little setup, too.
Yeah,
this really
we set
feels
this up
like,
at the last second.
I mean, you're already killing it on your podcast, but this does feel like we're on like a more traditional kind of. I love it. I love this.
I should have brought my arms, but
Guillermo,
you know.
Over there just waiting to like. Pipe in a band. Every time we look over here, we're like, right? Rick Glassman comes down on a fucking...
Yeah, he's snapping a lot.
On a bungee.
No, but I don't know, man. It's like, what do you think? What's next? Like, what more is there to do?
Well, I want
to
see more people, hopefully, in a situation where, with a little bit of scratch, I'm talking about comics, or you know, even young musicians and stuff, but I hope that... Doing something like this, and we've seen CK do it, we've seen Schultz do it recently, like unbelievably. And there's been other Gaffigans and people that have gone that kind of indie or you know, control your own IP. But what I hope that this sets the example of is to do something and own your content and to not hand it over to some big streamer or network that says, "We got you, kid." Yeah. It ends up on a splash page for maybe a day if you're lucky.
If you're lucky.
And then you're like in a position where you don't ever get to see your stream. It's not like this where you know your streams. You can look at your viewership. There is no Nielsen rating data sheet anymore. They don't tell you that stuff. Ben Stiller said recently he can't get his streams for Severance.
Oof.
On Apple TV. He's like, he wants to know, where are they watching? Who's watching? What age are they? And they're like, we haven't printed that out yet.
And also, how many people are watching? Yeah. They know. But they even knew... When they did, they even knew when it wasn't streaming.
Right.
Because, like, when Janet Jackson's titty popped out at the Super Bowl, they were like, this is the most DVR'd or whatever the TiVo at the time.
Can we just talk about that? It wasn't a lot of titty. There was a big, like, doily in the middle.
Yeah, what are we talking
about? Some titty around, like a giant figurine that was on her areola.
Yeah. But he's been shunned ever since. You know what I mean? But my point is, like, they have these numbers. But you know, it's a money thing. Like, if they tell Ben Stiller, "Hey, wow,
right.
Actually 50 million people,"
he leverages a better deal.
And he goes, "Well, then can we get more money for this and this and that?" When does business stop and art begin? And does it ever? Is it one of those, like, what is it, Venn diagrams? How much of the circle do you think it really is?
Luckily, not what... Do you remember many, many years ago, there was like a band, TLC, broke down like, this is how much of the pie you get. And stuff. And it was, if you've never seen that video, it's really fascinating. I think more of the pie can go to the artist these days. If you can have one person that is investing financially in you, if you can't do it, one person... To say, if this wins, we cut it and go our own way or blah, blah, blah. But if you can do it independently, and I hope that when this comes out, people see this example of like, I get my analytics. I get all the data from Moment. The day my contract ends, I get the emails. I get the data. I get everything. And by the way, the deal's over. It's 14 days and my IP is literally, the next day I could sell it out of my trunk, put it on YouTube for free. Mm. And that's what I hope that this ushers in the leasing window on a streamer. It might be a great streamer, might have a great attraction, you know, with other movies. The Russo brothers are doing something. We want your thing for 3 months. Let's do a short-term lease together and then give me my stuff, you know? What if that comic, we won't name names, what if the comic that we know has one great special and he doesn't or she doesn't get to do it to that caliber? They're never going to see their royalties, mechanical royalties, blah, blah, blah.
They're
going to chase for the rest of their life. And it costs a lot of money to find who has your money.
I know it's weird you say that, but I think that, you know, you're in a unique position because you didn't start in this era, you know?
Right.
Like, you do come back and, you know, it's weird because you've actually ushered in a new era. Right. Because, like, you know, being the guy on MySpace and realizing, you know what, the internet is something we can use to help us.
Yeah.
Because now the new era, the next iteration of that is podcasting.
Right.
You know, so, like, and so, if you're a podcaster, let's say, like, you know, Tom Segura, you know, your mom's house, you know, they have a huge platform. So now if he does a special, if he wanted to, he could just put it on your mom's house.
Right.
And it's already huge.
And why not? I mean, that's his network. That's his.
I think it's a nostalgic thing, man. Don't you think it's a kind of thing? We come from an era where we want this validation from Mr. Hollywood.
Yeah,
and Mr. Hollywood is HBO. It's Netflix. It's Showtime. It's all these places.
I will tell you. I promise you this: for every young person that's like pie-eyed and wants the validation, it does feel good.
Yeah,
you do get it, and I promise you, 5 years later, you'll be looking at people like me and going, "Where do I start to find the receipts to get paid what I should be getting paid?" It's like, you got to know the legalese. You got to be able to read that contract and know, okay, after this period of time, if I don't have this much, that's.
Dude, don't even get me started. I have two specials out yeah. in the ether someplace. And I email my manager all the time. Like,
yeah.
Yo, what's up with my first special? Cause once Showtime, once it was done, and then like, I don't even know where it is. I don't know where it is. Right. I don't know what's going on.
It's mirrored on some internet site in a little faster or slower so that they can't pull it for whatever copyright infraction is happening. Yeah. All those little tricks that people do to keep your content on their page.
I mean, it's crazy. And then it's like...
you ever search yourself and you see like you're on 9 different places for $2.99 and you're like...
It's like Kubi, Shlubi, you know...
Kubi, Shlubi, fuck me as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's like some sort of like, you know, this is some
breach
weird-
of contract... Boochie Cloochie.
Yeah. Some weird, you know, site. And you just go, how'd they get my... So I know exactly what you're yeah. saying, but it's, again, it's how long is it going to take before, yeah. you know, because then here's the thing.
But,
right?
But it also, like, weirdly, even though you're seeking out your residuals, but on another hand, if your stuff is permeating that well, you're happy that you're on the road and people are loving seeing you.
That's the
thing.
So
you can't be that
say.
Upset. Because you're like, I can go out there right now and do a show.
No, that's the difference right there. But I think that's the reason why, say, people right now want a Netflix special. You know, because I think like Netflix did a thing to me where they overpaid for comedy to corner the market. Because
like Chappelle and Rock and bringing those guys in.
Pre doing that stuff.
Right.
You know, people would say, when are you going to get an HBO special?
That's right.
That's how people would talk about it. And that would be the pinnacle. That'd be like being in Vegas as a magician.
The early aughts, it was still, that was the bell of the ball.
That was the bell of the ball.
90s was Comedy Central. 2000s was definitely HBO. Even 90s was like still Carlin and Rock, but it was like.
No, but that's the same company. So, you know, they were all under the same umbrella.
Right.
So, yes, Comedy Central was a thing that was like, if you were huge, it was going to be huge for you.
Right.
But, like, that's where you kind of started. You know, they had, like, Premium Blend and Live at Gotham. And
yeah.
So then it was like you were working towards that to get to what? An HBO special.
True.
That was the pinnacle of it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Netflix comes in and goes, you know what? Why don't we grab these guys? Because at the time, they wouldn't have done it. At the time... I don't think Chris Rock, Chappelle, and Louis, and Seinfeld, and all the deals that they made.
Yeah.
I don't think, right?
No. It was definitely like, it was, that was the only spot that gave you whatever that pedigree validation was just HBO.
HBO.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Now you could, like, look at somebody like Louis, and he's doing it completely through his own hub, right?
Well, he was one of the first guys to do that. Where he was like, he's selling it on his site. And
yeah,
he was like, man. You know what? I'm doing this my damn self.
Yeah, it was like during that there was that period of time where it was like, you know, digital copy. And then I remember doing like deals with like, remember like JTV or Ustream?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I would do like, you know, my college gig is $3 tonight. We'd have one stationary camera and you could pay to come into. So it was that, there was a little period of time when you were like, oh, wow, if nothing else, I don't need to do a deal in sharing in the profit with a streamer or network. I can really, you know, get 100% of what I've put into this thing.
As I listen to you talk about this, I realize part of the drive for your success that you've had over your lifetime now in Hollywood is that you seem to be on top of the business part of it.
Right.
Well, probably more so now since I've... What happened? 100%.
Yes.
Because you've mentioned this a lot now. It's like knowing the residuals, knowing the deals. So you're probably more on top of that more than anyone else
because
of what happened.
I've got an incredible group of people, and I'm like, I'm in student mode, learning from great attorneys and stuff as to like, because right now a contract is being written that 2 years from now some of the language because of the tech is going to change, and you're going to be stuck in language that they no longer have to oversee because the word stream has become something else,
bro.
Right? And river.
And that's how SAG messed up.
Okay.
That's so funny you say that. Because the Screen Actors Guild, they were so arrogant, thinking that we're going to be on film forever and we're going to cover film. And then, like, nobody uses film except for artsy fucks.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so now, years had to go before they finally figured out how to do new media.
Yeah, the language.
And the language of, like, you know, video versus digital and all that. Right. You know what I mean?
And so, a lot of people just took advantage of the language.
Yeah.
You're right. They'd buy the catalog, and then they go, oh, the artist that signed this deal, their language says VCR tapes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like they could get around paying you.
Man, well, here's,
you know,
I had a dumb deal. This is what I asked for. I asked for, because I couldn't get more money. I was like, well, give me 1,000 DVDs for free.
Okay.
Because I was going to take them on the road. Don't laugh at me. Let me tell you something.
Give me 1,000 of your DVDs. They didn't just deliver anything in their catalog. Oh,
I wish. That would have been. I think I could have done better. I think I could sell those
better.
You got
Freddy Got Fingered.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the Matrix 1 and 2. No. And it was like, literally, I think I got this deal. I got these DVDs 3 days before no one watched DVDs anymore. Right. I still have them. I still have like 900 of them in my closet.
Right.
So, I mean, you tried, because in my mind, I thought, you know, you go on the road and you sell them for $20 each.
That's what you did.
And it's like that'd be $20,000.
That was
extra.
Exactly what you did. You know what I
mean? So, but like I say, that's how quickly technology moves.
Right.
You know?
But when it switched over, and that's why it's so important, like, I hope people look at this example of what I put together to go, if in your own way, maybe in a way I haven't thought of, if you can get a few, say, comics together and go, man, we all chip in and it's just our budget and we create a show that maybe highlights all of us, and you can hold on to it and get with a place like a Moment, and there's a lot more places now that are coming down the pipeline.
Yeah.
You do a so small term lease. And by the way, you can do a small term lease, and if you get numbers that are bonkers, guess who's going to call? Netflix or Apple, and they're going to go, may we have a lease as well? May we have a window? Now, it might be more paperwork, but if you start with that IP and you can own it for the rest of your life, at least you can follow it. You watermark it with your team, with your legalese, and you follow it. If it goes on Digipack and 400 people, I'm here for you. I'm here for you now.
Where were you? Okay?
I only had to fail miserably. I had to be under rock bottom to really learn what I always wanted to know in the first place, because I am kind of fascinated with the business side of things. As much as I love having fun and being funny and do a spectacle event moment, you know, in my downtime, I really love learning the vernacular and the understanding of what's happening behind the scenes.
I feel like I see like cook management on the horizon.
Cook mentorship is probably better. Because I also I go through those moments where it's like, you ever be mentoring somebody and you know that there's so many things that they need to fucking change and do differently, and they just need to learn and they need to fall on their face, and they go, what should I do, Eric? What do you think I should? And you're like, how do I tell this person to just suck for like 6 years, and then finally one day they'll have a fit, and when they have the fit, they'll go on stage from the emotion of the fit, and it'll start to work.
And they'll understand how to be emotionally connected. Listen, man, when somebody asks me, like, hey, I'm going to start doing comedy, what do you think?
I just go,
get out of my face.
Yeah.
You know, go do it.
Right.
You know, just go do it, because what do you want me to do?
I like when they go, should I start with, like, open mic?
Yeah,
what else is there before that?
Well, they want to skip steps. That's the
Well, thing. Now they do, because they want that great, like, one hit on a TikTok or whatever, a video that goes viral, and you're like, yeah, if you get 100 million hits, good luck in the meetings when they're like, what else do you got? And you're like, I don't have fucking anything, because I'm an idiot. I had one good idea too early. I peaked before I even knew what a peak was. No, you want the road. You want the whole, every fucking low rung of the ladder, you should hear this. Like it's about to snap, and you got to live on those low rungs. If you want to get better, and also like just, you know,
well, I mean, you do, because you perform all the time. So I know you still have the thing to do stand-up comedy, whatever that thing
is. I love it. I love it because it's always because you're growing and you're evolving in your perspective. Now I can look back at 30 years. Now I'm taking the piss out of myself, out of my own opinions, things that I used to think were, I would die on the, you know, on the hill.
Yeah.
So it's the evolution of comedy and being able to like be present, but now have some funny self-deprecating hindsight and then wonder like, all right, what is the next thing that I want to do after something like this, you know? I don't know yet. I really don't.
Well, the fact that you could just like, you know, enjoy it now. I mean, are you enjoying it now? I mean, because I would say as like knowing you, as I'm not saying I know you all great, you know, I don't know a lot, but I'm saying just our interactions.
Yeah.
I would like to know like are you enjoying yourself finally? You know,
ready?
Like really.
It was like 90s, a lot of fear, even though fun, right? There's always fun in stand-up. There's always laughs and great breakfast somewhere like at 2 a.m. and all that. So it's like, can I do it? A lot of fear. And then the early 2000s, it was like, wow, right? The dream come true moments, not really knowing how to manage all that personally or professionally, but it was still fun, and it was still all those things you wanted. And then I hit the 10s, and I'm like, I'm dealing with a lot of personal strife and all those things. I get to Troublemaker in 15. I direct it, and right at that moment, I'm like, oh, wow. Presenting this how I wanted myself to be seen, I got really excited. In the last 7 years with the pandemic have been, I'm happy because I'm away from all that crazy shit. I'm not caught up in this machine out here. Yeah. I'm not of it. I still participate in it. Very different, way more fun. And so the last bunch of years, it's been more like me just being centered, happy, and loving stand-up comedy like I did at the very, very start.
That's great to hear. And do you think that, like mentioning the pandemic, do you think that the pandemic had a what part did it play in changing like your perspective on yourself, on life, on the business, on your relationships?
It made me just miss it tremendously. Yeah. It made me miss it. And I never felt like I ever took it for granted, but when it felt like it was maybe gone forever, and I was really like thinking about like highlight moments, even if they were just simple hangs at the club, man, where it's like, oh wow, all of us killed tonight. And we were, you know, everybody walked by. Can I take a picture with all of you? Best compliment. Hey, can we all take a picture together? Those are the best regular nights of our life away from a big tour or a big event.
As opposed to when they come and they give the camera to one person. Hey, can you take a picture of me? And you're just kind of like, oh, okay, I perform too, remember? Like, keep at it. You know, just
keep at it. You're good too.
You can't keep working. Yeah, I hate. That's the one I hate.
Yeah.
You know, they come out and they see two people and they go, oh my God. They were like, oh yeah, we liked you too.
Patrice O'Neill had the funniest thing about that ever because he used to, you know, be back in New York, back in Boston. And very early on, he was the first one of us to key into the, you know, getting the, you were good too. One night, if you know anything about Patrice, he was a world-class ball buster.
Yeah.
And if you didn't understand why he was coming at you the way he was, you could be very offended really quick. One time a guy gave Patrice the U2. Do you mind if I get physical with you for a second?
Sure.
Okay. A guy gave Patrice the U2 and tried to do the, what is that weird handshake where it's not a proper handshake, but we're gonna clasp hands? You ever have somebody go to shake your hand?
Oh,
they
go,
they do this, and it's like what? Like we're holding hands, gonna run together for a minute. So the guy gave Patrice the U2, but he wanted to. And, ready? I'm Patrice. Get the hell out! This motherfucker whacked this guy to where he pulled it. And was stunned and walked away. And Patrice said some more choice words, but man, it was the funniest U2 comeback.
Yeah. Now he'd be arrested for assault. He'd be canceled for assault in this day and age.
Being back at the clubs after, honestly, and even though there was outside gigs and it was a little wonky for a bit, and it just, when I got back into it, I said, I'm never going to not fully appreciate for the rest of my life that I've gotten to do this for a lot of my life.
Yeah, man. I think that I had a different perspective too. I had a whole different, you know, it was like I cared more about my relationships and, you know, I ended up getting married and, you know what I mean? It was just like, I had a more appreciation for doing stand up and how I was going to approach it. And just also I felt, I learned like, let me monetize my personality in other ways too.
Right. Yeah. Cause your podcast started like
yeah. you know, do podcasting, do like, you know, gaming.
Yeah.
There's so many different ways.
I felt like your identity really, it, you know, people know you for a lot of things, but I felt like you came out of that moment. You were doing it going into it, but really came out of that moment as like people knew you.
Yes.
Right? People knew you. They knew that you were important to other affiliations, but they also knew that you were important, you know, solo.
Yeah, and that's,
which is great.
But that's the thing that I feel like I think everyone needed to learn coming out of the pandemic.
Yeah. Who's a crony? Who needs a squad? And who can like fly solo and you know, create brand and content and all that good stuff, like, you know, on their own? And you were one of those people.
But this is like, again, like, this is like now the new thing. You know, this is this new business model now. This is like what you're saying, like, you know, owning your IP, owning, yeah. every, you know, now it's about, hey, you could do it with your podcast. Because now you're like, we are direct to consumer now. I mean, because here's what I think. The next thing is going to be YouTube.
I think the next, and YouTube's already big, you know?
Huge.
It's huge already, right?
Yeah, and now YouTube now, stories and all this stuff, but it's like even bigger.
But what I'm saying is Netflix didn't have the respect before, and then they got these dignitaries of comedy to do right. the specials. And then it became like, now people are walking around like, when am I going to see you on Netflix? Okay.
Right.
So they got that. The next one's going to be YouTube.
Yeah. And I hope that YouTube does something, maybe takes a page out of a few comics I've seen and myself, to where it's like, put a little bit, it's a little more money and a little more effort into creating a style, a look for the comic, so that aesthetically it feels beyond just, you can listen to jokes on a spot. You can listen to somebody's audio anywhere.
Yeah.
If you're going to make me, especially since, think about this, you're watching all these things that are so dynamic on television, on streaming now, and then it hits a stand-up special, and weirdly, that is now one of the most kind of low-key things, when stand-up used to feel like the most dynamic thing you could watch on TV. It flipped.
Right.
So you got to have something like, when people see my special, it still lives in three-quarter. It has to. The jokes are always going to live and die.
Yeah.
There's nothing you could do to make a joke funnier with a shot. But if it's lovely and there's an energy, like, why did this person shoot at a strip club? Why is this person at the laundromat doing their special?
Why is
this person at the symphony hall of the da-da-da? Something that matches the tone of the comic is going to be very helpful.
But sometimes I feel like people are searching for things and they're falling short.
Right.
But
it's got to be organic.
It's got to be organic.
Yeah.
But how you just talked about that is interesting, because do you think then that YouTube is going to get in the buying specials business? Because what I meant to say, YouTube, I meant to say, like, you know, you people are going to do it themselves. And then when they release it on YouTube, it's going to be, people are going to be like, oh, that's where I want to watch comedy.
Right.
As opposed to, but if you think that, you know, because YouTube could, they so easily could be like, hey, we want to produce this and make sure it's high level quality. Sure. I mean, I think they're going to, I think
that'll be, it'll probably be two deals. It'll be either YouTube produced, right? They'll come in and they'll, however that works, hopefully not perpetuity, the one word that you don't want in any contract, but whatever that deal is where they say, like, we will make it and cultivate this for you, versus I think that more people being able to go to them and they will understand that this is a one-year lease window and we want them to stay here because they're going to see the numbers they're aggregating and they're going to get then you want to do another year? You want to do – I hope that it's more short-term, you know, IP from artist to partner – and then it reverts back.
But see,
should.
I think the funny thing.
It's only fair.
The only thing that's different about comedy as opposed to, say, music is, like, you know, even with music now, because everything's streaming, it's like once you've seen the thing and this is where you can see it, like before it was like, you know, they could watch you on Comedy Central.
Right.
And then you're coming out with that album. And it's the only place they can hear it,
see it,
is on that DVD,
right.
on that CD. That's been taken away. So just having it out there or someplace living is like, do you think that's the most important
thing? But think about this, though. What we're talking about is the one place that things from other places usually end up spliced up and excerpts is YouTube.
Yeah.
So if YouTube's at the middle of it, you're not going to go on Netflix and see a random upload of a... So if that place figures out a way to be the most user-friendly in short-term leases so that people get their IP back, and hopefully they'll say, but we handle it well, please stay with us.
But my thing is, like, where would you even go is my point. Like, what I'm saying is that's what I'm saying, like, I feel like that's the last stop.
Is YouTube.
It's YouTube. So I'm saying you go to YouTube and they go, well, hey, we want to give you X amount of dollars because we want to make sure it's high quality and it's on
YouTube.
Where else is it going to go?
Right.
Like, you're going to, I'm pulling it off YouTube. To do what?
Well, it's funny though, because it used to be that I think the business model was somebody had it and then distributed it so that their network could get more monetization, versus now the model is if it's on a YouTube, as long as people are continuing to feed those numbers, they can get fresh new advertising. So it doesn't behoove them to even want to go beyond their own walls the way a syndication deal used to be like, oh, let's get it to TBS.
Right.
That's all.
No, but with comedy now, it's like this now. It's about getting it into hotels.
Right.
Getting it on Delta Airlines.
That's right. Like a great company like Universal's global distribution.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. They do an amazing job.
Yeah.
And
so
put it on planes and hotels and all those places that when you're off the computer somewhere else, you've got content.
But the question there would be like, you know, this is so nerdy right now, guys. But the question,
put this whole part on like double speed.
It's just like, it sounds like Charlie Brown's teachers. No, but then the question would be like, you have to ask yourself, why are you doing it? You know, that's just, what's your motivation? Are you doing it for money? Are you doing it for recognition?
Exposure. The profit is exposure.
Because
you got to pay your rent. And of course, everybody wants to make, listen, if you have a great comedy special or concert film or whatever at the center in a place like a YouTube, then you can be smart enough to figure out ways to merch and meet and greet and seminar. And you can do a bunch of other stuff around that.
You know what I was going to say, man? You know what? I really enjoyed when I went on doing shows with you.
Yeah.
You know, and I appreciate that. I felt like you did a little extra because I was there, and I appreciated that, you know? Like, because we went on a private jet, and we were staying at the Four Seasons, and you know what I mean? It was like, it was just very...
Think I did that for you?
No, but I'm saying... No, but I mean, I would...
I'm going out of pocket here for Eric on
this one. But I mean, I know that, like, if you have, like, your regular opener, they're not getting that kind of treatment for everybody. And maybe they do, and that's great.
I consider you a good friend. I wanted to have an experience that... And I do this a lot. I go, if this is the last blast for whatever reason, let's have a fucking great time with it.
It really
was a great
time.
I'll always figure out a way to make a buck and do whatever I got to do to, like, you know, get ahead. But in those moments, I felt like, let's make this really memorable. Let's look back on this and go, we had a buck. Oh, dude.
But I was going to say, though, what I liked, too, when I was, like, amazed at is, like, that you were right there with your meet and greet before the show.
Right.
Like, and it was like, guys, I mean, and it was like, I was seeing like the evolution of your fans too. Like, they've stuck around.
Right.
You know, because your fans are now like, your fans are like, you know, it's like a dude, he's like 48.
That's right.
You know, he's 52 now, and he's like, buddy. He's doing the fingers, and he's like, this is my wife, and here's my 19-year-old son.
This is my second wife.
We loved you, and it's like, man, how does that feel? How does that feel to, like,
really, really,
you know,
gratifying.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
It's like, you know, my fans, I've grown up, I always wanted to grow up with a generation of comedy fans. I accomplished that, but then the kids that are like, they didn't know my stand-up. They saw Employee of the Month. They saw Dan in Real Life. They saw something, Side Item. And then they come to, and we knew you did stand-up. And the cool thing is, you know this about me, like, when I'm going on stage to do a show, especially on the road, it's not like, oh, we're just going to see a good comedy show. So when I knew that next generation was there and their parents like, watch this, and I go up on stage to just like light it up to where they go, oh, we like the employee. We didn't even know the comedy was this good. We thought it was going to be like an homage to Zach from Employee of the Month.
That's interesting that I like that, because I feel the same way about, like, you always want the challenge.
Oh, man, yeah.
So you always want to be like, hey.
You want to exceed the expectation. People come out, they know you're funny. They're going to go, oh, we know Eric's going to give a great show. But when you put that little bit of extra effort, whether it's meeting them or something in your show that lets them know, wow, like, this wasn't a repeat of the last time he was here. He really worked on new shit and gave us a whole new show. And you do a lot of great band. You're always in the moment. And what's great about that kind of comedy, I always try to keep a piece of that, is it's always a show for you, and you feel it. And when you leave, you're like, "That's never going to happen again."
Yeah.
We're in a good shape, Manda. You know, to be in the long haul.
You know, and it's like it's funny because I just did La Jolla again at La Jolla Comedy Store.
Yeah,
and it was like
great
spot. It was great, but I was just there, and so like knowing that I was going to go there really put some pressure on myself because I was like, "Oh, I got to work on this because now I'm working on this marriage material and like you know, and it's in my own way." And I was like, "I like that. I like when people come and go. Man, I saw you like however many months ago, and this is all new, you know." So it's like that.
Or if they see you again and you've worked on the bit, and they go, "Ah, we saw that when it was new and it was all right."
Yeah.
And now it's crushing. It's like, you know, I think that it's always incumbent of a comic going on the road to give your fans something. I never want them to go like, "Oh, that was like that was good. That was a good show." It's like, no, give them something that really makes them feel that's a can't miss show.
Well, it's probably like, I'm not saying it's hard for you. That's not the words I'm trying to use, but what I'm saying is you have the experience of being like, you know, at the top of the food chain of like, I remember like you coming out in the Laugh Factory back in the day and I saw this kid in the crowd. And he was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe it's Dane Cook," you know? So like, you know, so like, how does that feel to be like, all right, so maybe it's not that anymore sometimes, and sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. Do you feel that? Does it bother you? How do you deal with it?
There was never a feeling of like it had to be that level, because I also grew up, you know, growing up, I love club comedy. I would watch the improv show, you know, comedy on the road or whatever
like Evening at the Improv and all those.
And I knew that stand-up was best consumed in a, you know, a comedy cellar type place, you know, like, you know, low ceilings. And I the same way I had such a respect for broadcasting because my dad had done a lot of I knew what real broadcasting was based on what my father taught me versus like just a superstar who happens to have a mic in their hand. And so when all that stuff started, like 150 arenas then turned into like, all right, now I'm going to do a great theater run or I'm doing clubs that I love.
Yeah.
For me, what that felt like was, whether it's a large scale gig or something that's more intimate, it kind of felt like the life of like the Rolling Stones will play a cool fucking hole in the wall and blow the doors off. And if a big gig comes along and you want to see the Rolling Stones and a huge event,
you go do that.
It's great. You know, so I never looked at it and said it's got to. Nobody would want to maintain. Those are fun. But maintaining that level doesn't feel like stand up when you're with a theater or a club full of people where you can really take your time and get into like how you're feeling about that. It's a whole different kind of show.
I mean, that's a true, you're you know, because you're a true comic. And so I was going to say too, is like, you also have seen like, you know, maybe it's someone that you really admire and you see him on stage just eating shit. And you know that that's part of comedy. You know that there's super highs and there's super lows.
Right.
And we're trying to find some consistency, but there's still highs and lows even within that.
Exactly. If you came to me tomorrow and said, "Hey, we're doing and Friends at Madison Square Garden or some arena," it's like, dude, yeah, I'd be there. Let's blow the doors off the place. Let's make it an event. But if you said to me, "Oh, we're doing like a cool little theater tour, it's 10 theaters on the West Coast," it's like, that's just as fun.
That's just as meaningful.
You know? Especially the fans will say to you, and I can't tell you how many fans said to me, you know, years after doing just arenas for like a good 5-year run, "I like seeing you, man, where I can really hear everything." And it's like,
they feel
wow.
Like they're a part of it.
Yeah. They were like, "We like the event, but this feels like we can actually understand what you're saying. And it's not just a spectacle. It's actually like a person talking to us."
You know, I think maybe it's because we're at your house now.
Yeah. Which it's looking really nice, man.
Yeah. We're at your house. I think that you're in a different place and I like it.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. I feel good, man.
Yeah. I think you feel good. I know you're engaged.
Yes, I am.
Congratulations.
Thank
on
you,
that.
Man. To both you know? Of us, man. Yeah. We the came old, out of the pandemic with it, love. Huh?
Yeah.
The old guys did it.
So I feel like I like that, you know? I mean, it's because, like, you've had your ups and downs. You've had your, you know, you've had people, you know. I think no one's – I think no one has been loved more or hated more than you.
Probably,
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just to have that, well, except for, like, maybe some of these, you know, in this new era of, like, people, you know.
Well, now you're love-hated in, like, a 48-hour period and everybody just forgets.
But I think that you've had this thing, and I say, I feel like you're at a cool place now, and I like it. Yeah, and so where can people find the special?
So right now what we're doing is, Above It All is on Moment, danecook.co/DaneCook. I mean, you can go to danecook.com and it's just going to jet you right to
the... there.
Right? So it's just danecook.com.
Yeah.
But the whole idea with Moment and, like, again, giving Andrew Schultz his flowers, he had... I've been talking to them and then he did his special through there and it was so, such an example of this is the way people want your special in their pocket. They want to be able to get, you know, cool stuff. There's, you know, merch bundles, all the stuff that comes with, like, an exciting drop. But... to be able to do it and then say, now I'm going to present it maybe a month later. I've already got a place that I want to go after that's reached out and said, we'd love to do a window. And I'm like, wow, this idea of like being rogue and being random and hitting different windows, different places where people consume that may not be a streamer or even an internet site.
Okay, funny you mentioned Andrew Schultz because it's weird because you guys come from different places doing the same thing, and that's what's great about it.
Right.
Because Andrew, I feel like maybe he didn't get the breaks that he wanted. Like he didn't, you know, like Hollywood wasn't come crawling. The comedy clubs were like, I don't know about this guy.
Right.
And he was like, you know what? I'm going to get my own fans. I'm going to do this my own way.
That's right.
And then he did that, and now you know he's carved a niche for himself that he's decided I don't need this recognition from these other things. And so kudos to him for that.
Oh, man, huge.
And cut to somebody that like yourself. Who did get the recognition? You came up in a traditional way,
right?
And then you hit the pinnacle of it, and now you're here finding the next way to do it.
Exactly, and you know what? And doing it in a way that complementary to what I did at the beginning, guys. Now, like Andrew are doing now, and looking and saying, there's great ways to be a hybrid. You can still be a showman, but you can be business minded and say, you know what? There's a way to reach way more fans in way more interesting ways and places if I keep the energy behind the content instead of just saying, put it on your page somewhere.
Yeah.
And then they don't really, they're not caring about, they care about their subscriptions, but they're not calling you going, hey, you know what we should do? We should do this today. Here's a great promo. And you'll never get that phone call once you partner up with
they
have it.
Yeah.
That's it. They just want it to be able to say we got
and
it.
And in their mind, they're just kind of like, well, hey, we're doing you a favor.
Right now, Schultz is probably somewhere going, now I can do this. Now my phone's ringing. That might be an interesting avenue. I never thought about that. And he can explore several windows before he chooses to probably make a bigger deal. Somewhere where
and how about this?
Yeah,
the cool thing would be with this generation if they decide to go, I'm good. You know, the big streamers call like, hey, we want it. They're like, I'm good. I have so many fans.
Yeah,
like you know, that's that. You know,
do you know how many kids under the age of 25 are watching TikTok?
I know
this.
It's unbelievable.
95%.
Yeah.
Only TikTok.
Oof.
That's it. They're not, you say, do you watch TV? They're like,
I don't know.
My parents watch TV. What do you mean TV? my TV's on the go because I'm on the go because I'm going to my next cool thing where I'm going to take video. Or I'm going to be, you know, this next generation is living in a moment all the time.
Snapchat's another one, man.
Right? Snapchat's, it's...
It's the huge numbers.
95%. And then, like, of that number, it's like, 88 are just jumping over to YouTube when they want to watch long form, whatever that might be.
And long form is like 8 minutes.
So to anybody who's on the come up going like, what does all this mean for me? It means come up with your stuff, get it spliced up, and it can be a shorter piece of the long show and start exploiting yourself through these avenues and build your fan base the same way Andrew or myself or even people before the internet did it, which is like meet people wherever you can meet them
and
let them get to know you. That's what you did. The podcast was a way to know Eric's not just from Workaholics, the funny guy who does it. He went from, in some ways, being a crony of Adam in that team to being out front with your own very strong career. So be that. Be this.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm still trying to be that.
Yeah, you rent the plane next time. Take me, bitch.
Oh, yeah. I'll rent the plane. It'll be like, you mean the middle seat on the Southwest flight. I'll be like, Dane, I'm going to be using my miles to get you there. So, but hopefully we'll see. Do some more shows with this guy. We'll be out there in someplace. But check out. Make sure you go to danecook.com or the other one.
Yeah, moment.co.
Moment.co/danecook to check out his new special shot right here.
Above it all.
Above it all. You know, and that's a great name for it, too.
Yeah.
You're finally above it all.
Yeah, man. It's a lot of
symbolic.
Fun. It's the funniest stuff that I've put together over a 5-year period since Troublemaker. And the fact that Marty Kullner directed it and really brought the best out of me over 2 great nights here. So hope you guys have a lot of laughs with
Yeah, so make sure you check that out. I got all the information. All those links and everything will be in the description.
We get it.
I know.
We get it. We know.
Hey, but this is the point of it, man. This is the point of doing this. And what I love about this podcast right now is like we started in the day and now it's like come down to the night. You know what I mean? Like it's like I'm doing some sort of artsy fartsy thing right here. So
fade out with jazz music.
Yeah. You know what? I probably will. But anyways, guys, thanks, Dane, for being on. Thanks for having me here to do this. And now we are going to dinner.
Bye.
See you guys.